Hey everyone, I'm excited to bring to you episode 66 of the Davidson Hang podcast. I have with me one of our co-authors for The Great Pause, a collaboration book that we're doing together alongside many other awesome coaches and amazing people in the world. And so Elizabeth Hall is a certified intuitive eating and body image life coach. So I know that you also have your certification. You have a bunch of different certifications, right? Certified by the ACC and the CPC, which is the credentials by the International Coach Federation. It's a governing body that, basically it helps bring more rigor and legitimize like the life coaching industry, which right now, it's a mixed bag, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. This is wonderful. I did get that credential because I felt like I wanted, if there was a gold standard, I wanted to have it. But I will also admit that that's old conditioning and old programming that says you need to have these credentials, you need to follow the steps. I know there's a ton of really effective, caring, wonderful life coaches out there that might not have these credentials. So ultimately it comes down to, who you vibe with and who is sharing what you need to hear.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Because I do think that in the sense of like a marketing standpoint and there's all these things that, like one could say like, oh, you're trying to get our money.
Mm-hmm.
But you, like having gone through like accomplishment coaching, that's, that's how I know the person that connected us. Like I do see like the value of having the certification because the rigor was like pretty intense. Like just graduating from accomplishment coaching, like it took a lot for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In terms of just like practicing active listening and being with people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I would agree that that level of practice needs to happen no matter what, for sure. Like whatever kind of coaching you do go into, absolutely. We do need to do our own work and have that practice. It just can look a lot of different ways.
Yeah. No, it's a very, I like, it's your, you can tell that like you've been doing the work, right? You're very compassionate. You understand that like, hey, just because you don't have the certification doesn't mean you're any less, right? It's just a path that you choose. And ultimately it's a choice. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's a little bit of like your last guest on the podcast. It's kind of questioning that conditioning. Where did I get this idea that this is what I need to do? Is it really true? Can I be just as effective with or without it? What is it I'm trying to accomplish? Those kind of things. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I see you have a lovely wall behind you.
I do. I had to pop that on because with all our COVID Zoom calls, I found my space was looking very drab and I looked a little bit like I was in jail. So I thought I needed to lighten up a little.
No, that's cool. Is that what's the, it seems like a very holistic, like spiritual connected to the universe type of vibe to me.
It is. I mean, it's a bit of the tree of life with the sun and the moon, also kind of in a bit of a yin yang shape, which I love. So this has been sort of a symbol I've had my eye on for a long time. And I was like, oh, cool, I can put it on my wall.
How does one get that onto the wall?
Like it's actually a wall decal. Yeah, I just ordered it.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, put it on the wall. So yeah, I love it. And so now this is my little tiny space in my house where I do all my work. And now I get to look at that, which just makes me happy. And I think it's super important to have those little things everywhere around your house, just things that make you happy.
Yeah. What are some like recent, other than the wall decal, what are some other recent purchases that like you felt like has definitely been worth the investment?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's funny. I use an example that I have over here of a big fluffy pink heart on my couch, which, it was like $10 at Target. It wasn't a big investment, but it just reminded me, it reminds me when I look at it of my commitment to connect to my heart. having been someone who's always been in her head my whole life, way more mental processes and all that, I needed that sort of felt sense reminder that what this journey is really all about is connecting to our hearts. So things like that, just little things like that. I also have tons of candles and, you know, I have all these little snow globes that just make me happy that have like little Buddhas in them. And I don't know, just little things that make me happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I saw that you also, you came from an actuarial background, right?
Yes,
so
I did.
That's a little bit different than being a life coach, I would say.
Very. Yes, exactly. Just a bit of a shift.
There's a coincidence as well, right? Because I do think if people tend to have a lot more of, like, come from a more head-based, like, thinking-based, problem-solving-based background, you know, they tend to see, oh, okay, maybe this is not, you know, like, something that as, you know, I don't know, like, I'm sure there's a correlation somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I found that I love the thinking space. So I'm very much a thinker. And that has always been a wonderful tool for me. But I didn't realize that it's not the only tool. And that was the only one I had. So I had to, I did sort of an about face and shifted out of that. So I was a health actuary for probably almost 20 years, off and on as I raised my children. And, you know, I loved, again, the thinking part of it, but it wasn't my calling. It wasn't something I felt very heart connected to. And I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know what was missing. I thought it was just me and that I just didn't like the work that I was doing. And as I've evolved on this path, I've just realized, yeah, I just needed something that was more heart-centered. And that's when I fell into the coaching on women's bodies and food issues, which is so much more rich to me because it's so full of healing and compassion and support, and it's just totally different than the actuarial space. So
it's interesting too, right? Because I do, like, I'm a CrossFitter. I was a nutrition major. I run, you know, I do like a lot of these, I guess. But you do, it's interesting when I read these biographies of a lot of these, like, the world's fittest women or men, like, the, you know, number one CrossFitters and stuff, right? You start to see that a lot of, I feel like, the most in shape people are probably the most insecure in a way, in the sense that they're almost like trying to, like, heal a past trauma, and it's never been like fully healed in a way. But then, interesting, because, but then you see, like, it's interesting because what they represent can actually impact, like, millions of lives, right? So then you're like, okay, well, at least I see that there's impact. So I don't know. It's a very complex and interesting thing that we have, but I mean, it kind of works, I guess, you know?
It is. You're right. It's very complex. And that's also what I love about it. So it's as complex as an actuarial equation in many, many ways. Because, yeah, some of the people might be driven by insecurity and they might be driven by traumas. And then those of us who are watching them have those same insecurities and traumas, and none of us are healing by following that example. So what I try to bring it back to is, let's stop looking at other people and what they're doing, and let's look at what you're doing, and let's look at how your body's responding and what your body is meant to do and be, because not everybody is supposed to have certain body types and shapes. We're all beautifully different, and that's a uniqueness we need to embrace as opposed to fighting it. And again, that comes down to some of that societal conditioning that says we're all supposed to look a certain way, we're all supposed to eat the same things, move the same way, and just hold ourselves up to a standard that for some of us might not be attainable, because again, we just all have different bodies. And so just having people let go of some of those old paradigms and just embrace who they are and embrace what their body wants to be, I find it's been very healing and freeing for myself. And then that's what got me into wanting to coach around this topic. So
I see. Yeah. Was there like a specific, or was there, I guess, like a tipping point where like something happened, like something, whether it was like someone close to you, would love to learn? Because I do think with the people that do get into the life coaching, you know, healing work, there's typically, I noticed, like at least a couple events that have like really like helped someone see like, oh, okay, like this is like very fulfilling for me.
Yeah, and great question. I love the term tipping point. It's actually something I refer to a lot in my work. But I was what I would call a chronic dieter, meaning, you know, age 12 hits, you're going through puberty, you're feeling awkward in your body, and you decide you're going to control it and change how you eat and limit it and restrict it. And that got me certain praises, that got me certain ways of feeling and being, that I just kept on that path. I thought that's what we all were supposed to do. I thought that's what being healthy was all about, was limiting, controlling, all of that. And as I got older, it got harder and harder to maintain. And I think it's not because physically it was harder to maintain, but I had no emotional intelligence around it, and I had no spiritual basis around it. So all I was doing was just driving myself all the time, without any compassion and without any real self-care that was nourishing. It was always, you're not good enough, you need to do better, you need to work out harder, you need to eat less. All these things. And I think my tipping point just came when it just seemed like I was bopping from diet to diet faster and faster. Like I tried this one for a week and then that one for a week and nothing was sticking. Nothing felt good. And every time it didn't work out, you end up buying that box of cupcakes and, you know, eating the whole thing. Or I used to just eat the frosting off because that's all I really wanted. But, you just got to a point where you're like, this can't be good either. Like this push and pull is not healthy. There's got to be something going on here. And that's when I started kind of going down the rabbit hole of sort of the emotional eating path. In addition to what is non-diet all about, I didn't know that was even an option, that you could stop dieting and start intuitive eating and listening to my own body. And it was just, there are so many things I learned and so many just phenomenal teachings that I came across. And then it all intersected with even just science and spirituality. I started kind of going down both those paths. And that's when I just got that. I actually didn't think I wanted to coach it. I just wanted to know it for myself for a while. And I stayed there for a while. But then I just felt compelled to share it. I was like, people have to know this. They have to let themselves out of the prison they're putting themselves in. And just know that they have a choice. And that just became so driving. And then I headed off into the life coaching certifications just to sort of add on to what I was already learning about the body work. And yeah, and that's what brought me to where I am now.
That's awesome. I mean, it is tough, right? I think in today's age, like, because of social media and Instagram and like Snapchat and just TikTok or whatever it is that people do, it's hard to not like see like, oh, I want that, right? Because it's all like the highlight clips of our lives, right? So if you see, you know, there's someone posting like their vacations in whatever beach, Bali or something, like, or Maldives or something like that, you're kind of like, oh man, like, why does she look so good? Like, that's, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I find myself, I think it's like, to your point, like the self-talk that you have about it, if it's empowering, it's like, well, I want to do CrossFit because I enjoy it. Like, it's fun. Like the community versus like, oh man, like if I don't beat my PR, like I'm such a failure at life, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's, for me, at least I've noticed, like, that's where it's like, okay, this is actually fun versus like, well, am I doing it because, like, you know, is it for me or is it because, like, I'm going to get a lot more clicks on my, more followers on the gram, you know?
Right, right. Absolutely. And I mean, I actually went down a CrossFit path too. I did CrossFit for a couple of years as well. And there were parts of it I loved. There, I could totally see loving the energy of that community. But I also used it to beat myself up all the time with, I wasn't intentionally trying to lose weight, but I definitely wasn't as fit as everyone else. And I just constantly berated myself about that, as opposed to being like, because I didn't necessarily even want to get to that level. I just wanted to go work out and, you know, enjoy the camaraderie of the people in the group. And unfortunately, the box I was in wasn't particularly sensitive to that type of athlete. They were more of the, you know, let's push yourself really super hard all the time. And so it didn't work out for me, but it was a great experience. And, you know, that's the one thing I do love, is just the idea of trying different things to find what does work for you. And what I found now is just to have the compassion for myself. If there's something out there that I try that might not be for me, I'm going to keep going though, to find the thing that does work for me. Cause, obviously it does feel good to move your body and have people supporting you and that kind of thing. Or to be a solo athlete and just like to walk or swim or whatever it might be. So.
Yeah. I like what you said about like trying different things, and everyone is so different, right? So it's hard to say, like, because it works for my friends that, you know, and then sometimes we judge ourselves too. It's like, oh, why does it work for my friends? And how come I don't vibe with it the same way? But then, you know, we need to have a little bit more, or we get to have more self-compassion and just be like, oh, it's okay. Like, I'm different, you know, it's not a big deal.
Exactly. And we're all built differently. So we're all going to look differently. So if we look at Instagram and see somebody and decide that's what I have to look like, well, then we really need to ask ourselves why. What do we think they have that we don't? What is it that we want? And what kind of limitations are we putting on our thinking by thinking you have to look a certain way to have what you want? It's just not true. And I think more and more people are waking up to that. And it is an awakening, which goes with all of the different spiritual teachings that I've been learning along the way as well. It's an awakening to look at your body and see how your identity is tied up in that and choose how you want to let that play out in your life. Do you want it to control you, or do you want to have more peace and freedom with it?
Yeah, and it is like a weird time right now too, right? It's almost like a reset because of what's going on. Would love to, and I'm sure this ties into what your chapter in the book, but would love to learn a little bit more about what compelled you to want to contribute to this awesome collaboration piece, and then how, and even, you know, when we started it, we probably didn't even anticipate it to continue on this long, right? I know, like, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I think COVID will be done in like a month or two, and then now here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, and so my chapter in the book is about food and about what something like a global pandemic can sort of tell us about our relationship with food, because I saw so many memes about people, you know, talking about quarantine 15 and they're worried about gaining weight, worried their health routines would fall to the wayside. And to me, it just sort of indicated that overall lack of trust in both our body's ability to adapt. And it showed a little bit of an over emphasis on the identity of what a body looks like. So to identify with what your body looks like to the point where you are stressed when it changes is a little bit problematic, because we live in bodies that are going to change frequently, especially as a woman, as you go through pregnancy and things like that, our bodies are supposed to change. Going through puberty, going through menopause, our bodies are supposed to change. And if we can only be happy if we're identified with a certain body shape or size, that's very limiting. And I don't want to live in a world that's limiting. I want to live in a world that's full of possibilities. So my chapter is a little bit about taking that time, the COVID time, to kind of investigate and explore that relationship. Not to judge it, but just to say, why would it make me so uncomfortable for these things to happen? And why don't I trust my body to know what to do? Even if it means routines change, my body shifts, and then it shifts back as I get a new routine. So it goes along the lines of trying new things. And what kind of things are make my body feel at its best. Like, let's tune into that. If I tune into that, then my body's going to be okay. I don't have to stress about it as much.
Yeah, there's a lot in what you just said. How does one, because I do think a lot of us aren't as in tune with our bodies. Like, even for me, right? Like, when I do hold some trauma or whatever it is in my body, I don't necessarily sit and think like, okay, where is it? Is it tightness in my stomach? Is it my chest, my heart? Like, how does one, what does your practice look like? Because I know everyone's practice is different, but just ways of practice, having a little bit more awareness around how our body is feeling and how we could just listen to it more.
Yeah, well, you raise a good point. And there's the thinking part and there's the feeling part, and they're both important. And then I think there's also the spiritual part, which is hugely important. So mentally, you know, I might go through a process of just questioning myself, like, well, why do I have this idea? Where did I get that idea? And then I'll go into, and how does this idea make me feel? And like you said, I might sit and identify where I feel it in my body. And then I might come up with some kind of a reframe for what would it be like if I didn't think that, just to feel what that feels like in my body. And usually you can feel the relief when you let go of a limiting belief. And then you know that that was limiting you. And then it just becomes a matter of, you know, continuing to let go of those limiting beliefs and then call in beliefs that are more powerful. Like, my body is always moving towards optimal health. My body knows exactly what to do. I can trust my body. So it's a little bit of that both, like letting go of the old stuff and calling in some of the new, more empowering beliefs. And then that's kind of the spiritual piece that comes in there too, and just says, you're okay. No matter what's going on, you are going to be okay. And so let's find out what it is that's getting you sort of fearful and see how we can shift that, address it, accept it, let go of it. And that's why I say this work is so rich and complex, right? Because you also use the word trauma. A lot of people have a lot of trauma stored in their bodies. And it's a whole process of getting to know that as well and letting go of that. Some of us even handle those traumas with food. So we use it to cope. We either use it to control or we use it to even what some people would call overeating, in terms of using it for the fun and the excitement and the free feeling that we might not have in other places in our worlds. So to me, our relationship with food is such an incredible, it's like a GPS system. It's like, if I'm feeling pretty neutral and pretty non-judgmental about where my food is at, that's a pretty good indication that things are going well. But if I'm overly controlling, or maybe overly using only food to soothe and cope, that's pretty interesting. What is that all about?
As someone who, because it's funny for me, because I do notice, like I think ice cream is like sort of my like go-to when I'm like kind of feeling like I'm like, oh, like I, like if I don't want to deal with like a particular issue or emotion, I'm like, I'm just gonna like eat ice cream, you know. But it's like I do, but then it's interesting because sometimes like I'll spend a little bit more to eat like really healthy, like farm to table food. And then I judge myself like, oh, I shouldn't have spent that much money. You know, it's weird like how my mind goes, but then I do feel like better afterwards. But then there's like that guilt, and it's like, doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of like treating my, you know?
It is. It's true. It's very true. And so those just become really interesting places to explore. The guilt about spending the money, what's that all about? Or even if you felt guilty about eating the ice cream, what's that all about? Like, what would it be like if you just were like, this is what I want right now. This is going to be amazing. I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm going to so enjoy this bowl of ice cream. Uh-huh. And let it be, instead of having it continue to, because you're still going to eat the ice cream. So then why add all that judgment on top of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, during it, I'm like super present. Like, I'm eating it. It's the, like, you know, 10 minutes later part where I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah. And again, even that, oh crap, it's like, well, why oh crap? Like, what do I think I just did? Like, what am I worried about? Why am I judging it? That brings up a whole nother layer of what might be lurking beneath that little bowl of ice cream.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
There is. Yeah.
Well, so you mentioned like, so you've had a lot of like, you've practiced your spiritual, because I do think like when people think food, not everyone thinks of it in like a spiritual way. But I think sometimes when I'm extremely present, like I'll have gratitude for like the farmers and even the person at the farmer's market that like sold me the, or, you know, like has shared with me the kombucha or whatever it is, right? Like I feel like immense like gratitude, right? So, but not every meal is like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But I love that you can connect with that on a certain level, because that is what it's all about. And it doesn't have to be every meal, because yes, we live in a world that's busy and we're often not entirely present. And maybe the goal is to be more present, but, you know, we're not going to then beat ourselves up for not being present, because it defeats the purpose a little bit.
I think that's like the interesting part about like the self-help industry, right? There's so much that, like, it can be a lot sometimes, right? Like, mm-hmm. sometimes, like, you just kind of want to, like, all right, like, I'm just going to have a whole month where I don't necessarily have to read all these books or listen to these podcasts or, like, even, like, attend a meditation retreat, right? It's like, mm-hmm. sometimes you're like, oh, man, all my friends are going to, like, a meditation retreat. Like, I kind of, you know, but it's like, okay, that defeats, like, the purpose.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's true, because we don't actually need any of those things. Sometimes they help us let go of certain things or move certain energies, but sometimes we don't need them at all. We just need to tune into ourselves and be with ourselves. And again, another point about COVID is just having that time and opportunity for many people, not everyone, to do that, go within.
So people who are listening to this after right now, we're still in the middle of the, well, who knows, but we're still in, you know, COVID days. What are some of the recent realizations that you've had from having more time to yourself and time to just be with, you know, just you and not necessarily, you know, not in large gatherings as often?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say just the opportunity for connecting more to presence and the opportunity to be at peace with what is. Those have been the two things that have been, I've had an even bigger opportunity to just reflect on those things by having some of my other responsibilities take a back seat during COVID. And now I realize that those are the things that have always needed to come first. And those are the things we often put last. Mm-hmm. Because when I approach anything that I'm doing from those places, either places of presence or not judging, but being at peace with what is, I find that I have so much more capacity and I am so much more aligned, and everything is coming just from that deeper place that we all have. And that's been a gift for me of having this pause for sure.
Yeah, you're right. I do think sometimes like we occupy ourselves with a lot. I call it like five, six and sevens and even eights, when it's like, I've noticed for me, like just making a practice like only saying yes to nines and tens, which, you know, every day looks different, but for me it's like, okay, like, is taking a walk around the block, like, is that gonna source me, It's like, yes, it will, you know, so that's doing that instead of like just saying yes. And then like, you know, you're hanging out with friends and you're drinking, you're not really like, you kind of don't want to be, but you're kind of like, oh, like everyone else is doing it. You know, there's like a lack of like intentionality, I would say sometimes when we just kind of like say yes to everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as a, you know, a people pleasing mom figure in this world, we often start off that way, just, you know, trying to get the good grades and trying to do all the things that you're supposed to do and do them right. And losing weight was always part of that, like trying to have the body that you're supposed to have. And so you, again, that's that conditioning that there's a certain way to do things and I'm not doing things right if I don't do it that way. And I mean, I woke up at 42, not even knowing what I like to do at all. I had no idea. And that started me on this path of, well, let's find out, because it would really stink if, you know, you never did. and that was one of those tipping points as well, just recognizing that that needs to be part of all of our days as well.
I often hear that it's tough for moms right now, because like the space that sometimes mothers get when, you know, your children are in school or after school activities and things that normally give you the space to kind of unwind and recharge, it's been tough. How's it been for you right now?
Yeah, and I'm my kids are older, so I do have more space. And at the same time, I've had to take it. There have been times where I have to stop the voice that says you're not being a good mother because you're not playing right now. Because this 5 minutes or this 10 minutes or even this 30 minutes, whatever it is going to so recharge me that I'm going to be the better mother that I want to be. But if I don't take that time, I am just layering myself thinner and thinner and thinner until something's going to break. And then nobody's having a very good time. And whether it's with children or whether it's with our jobs or our relationships or our anything, it's really that same concept of the feeding yourself first, the taking nourishment so that you can have capacity to be more for other people. Because it serves no one if we just completely deplete ourselves and then try to keep operating from that space. So I would, for myself, whatever it takes. And sometimes there's the acknowledgement that there's not some space for it today. Well, I'm definitely going to put it on the calendar for 2 days from now, or something along those lines.
Do you think, like, I guess, like, why do you think, because I do think Western culture in general, like being a mother looks like a certain way. Because I would, because like, it's interesting because a lot of like Asian cultures, right? Like, it's funny because like I see like the differences in a lot of like the parenting philosophy is like a little bit different. Like, for instance, a lot of like, I mean, this is like, it's like a pretty big generalization, but I do think like, and we often like judge like our Western parent, like mothers, and they're like, oh, they're like giving them way too much freedom. Like they're able to do whatever they want. Whereas like a lot of Asian mothers are like, no, like, you know, like you should like study, you should do this, like you should do this. And then I don't think one is right or wrong, but how do you sort of like develop like your own parenting philosophy? Because I think there's so many books out there. There's so many like experts out there. And then I feel like people are like judging like parenting, but it's like, there's no right or wrong way, right? It's just like, I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, it's like anything else, whether it's food, jobs, relationships, it's the same thing. It's getting lost in the judgment of what other people are doing and not finding what's aligned to you. So I think the parenting philosophy that I live with now is just being true to what works for me and my family. And someone else might look at our situation and have a judgment about too much freedom or whatever the case may be. I might even be tempted to judge it myself, like, oh, I should really be coming down harder on this, this, and this. But I've come to realize that again, when you have too many rules and too much structure, you lose that creativity and that spaciousness. And it's amazing that when I step back from that kind of fear, because it's also a fear-based way of parenting. It's a, if you don't do this, this isn't going to happen. Then that's not going to happen. Then that's not going to happen. And oh my gosh, before you know it, you know, your world and your life is ruined. And that's a lot of catastrophic thinking, and it's very fear-based. But it also takes a great deal of my own work to pull back and say, what am I assuming here? Why am I assuming the worst? What am I interpreting? And how can I free up the space for all of us so that they can be more creative, they have more capacity, they don't feel like I'm on their case all the time. And again, it's the exact same thing that we do with our bodies and our food. Like, how can we make it more spacious and creative and not feel like we're just pushing and forcing and limiting all the time? Because that's not a very fun way to be.
It's interesting because I do think, and this is like completely different topic, well, kind of related, but like, what are your thoughts on like intergenerational, like trauma being passed on from generation to generation? Because I do think it honestly, it stems from like the grandparents and then their parents and their parents, right? And it's hard where you disrupt that pattern, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the awareness of knowing the pattern needs to be disrupted is one great thing. And again, I'll bring it back to my body work. Like, a lot of times the ideas that we get from our parents or from our teachers or from our grandparents or whatnot. And we do have to decide we're going to change it for ourselves, which does change it for future generations. The other side fascination I have is sort of the neuroscience behind this, in that when you have a parent and you're a child, they pattern in your nervous system their fears. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you might not even be aware that you've kind of been imprinted in that way. And it takes this awakening and this awareness to notice that and decide, I don't want to be that way, or I want to shift this. And to me, that's sort of how, again, how you heal the future generations, because you are attuning to your own nervous system and you're healing that and you're regulating it. So you don't have all these, you know, fight, flight, fear situations that you're constantly dealing with.
Yeah. I think a lot of people wait until like a triggering moment to sometimes like a catastrophic moment for people mm-hmm. to actually like start to do more of that like inner work. Mm-hmm. Not saying that's everyone, but how does one even, cause I don't think a lot of us don't like just sit around and be like, oh, like, who am I being today? Like, who do I want to be for the world? Right. I think that's like that's just not most people's like normal way of thinking. So how does one practice that and then just incorporate it, even maybe like a daily routine or something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's nothing that ever occurred to me either until, and I didn't have really a catastrophic awakening. I had more of an awareness that I turned into a choice. Like, I realized I can either keep going the way I've been going, or I can choose to see things differently. And what are the possibilities if I do that? So I would say somebody has to want it. Somebody has to know that there's something that they feel like they could be serving in a bigger way, whether it's themselves or their families. So there has to be something, even if it's not catastrophic, there has to be some desire to have some kind of a shift. In some way, because you're right, it does take some work to then go on that path. And I also, you know, it's going to look different for everyone, and nobody has to go any deeper than they really want to. For me, I just love this. I love this space of exploration. I love figuring out what are my patterns, what am I thinking, how am I feeling. So the whole thing for me has been a pretty natural unfolding. But I would say for anybody who doesn't feel that way, but maybe just has an inkling that they could feel better in a certain space, just get curious about it and explore what that might look like for you. Whether it is working with a coach or whether it's reading a book or listening to a podcast, or just asking yourself some questions about it. You know, that awareness is just the key place to start, that there's something that you just would like to be a little different.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite books to follow on this topic? Because it is a fascinating topic, and it is stuff that people, I feel like, not like everyone thinks about or talks about regularly.
Yeah, that's a great question, because my books are very distinctly all about food and bodies, or they're all about sort of the spiritual path. So I'm trying to think, like, as far as the food piece goes, the book about intuitive eating was pretty fundamental for me. And obviously, because now I'm an intuitive eating counselor, that's a huge place to start if you do have issues with food. But if you're kind of just on a spiritual awakening path, I don't know if I have a favorite. There have been a lot of good ones. I am a big fan of Abraham. I don't know if you're a fan. Yep.
Yeah. Carter, and I like my favorite is Wayne Dyer.
Yep, Wayne Dyer. Yep, he's great as well. There's also some books by Jen Sincero, which are really fun. One's called You're a Badass. And I think there's a You're a Badass at Making Money. They're just kind of a fun intro to some of this more complex spiritual concepts if you're not, if you're just looking for something that sort of is an intro, a light and fun intro. Those were fun. I mean, there's so many. There are a lot of entry points.
Yeah, I like Jen's book, actually. I read the Badass and Making Money one.
Mm-hmm,
and
yeah.
And it's like lighthearted. It's like,
yeah.
It's like you need to infuse humor into it, right? Or else
Absolutely. It's
like a chore. And when it starts to become like, a chore, that's like, okay, maybe, I should have more fun in the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm a big fan of Eckhart Tolle as well. I mean, in talking about presence, he's kind of my go-to on that topic. But I also find that sometimes I dive deep and I get immersed. And then I like you were saying, sometimes you just step back and you let it go. You might even let it go for 6 months. You might let it go for a year. Mm. And then you circle back and you're able to even receive a little bit more because you let it go. You're not forcing it. And it's you circle back and it's like, wow, this is truly profound. How did I not see this a year ago? Well, because you're not the same person. Like, we're all sort of growing and expanding and evolving all the time. And that's never going to stop. So, the whole point is sort of not to force it to look a certain way. Let it evolve.
Yeah. Well, this has been like such an amazing conversation. I feel like it definitely makes me think twice about, I think it's cool that I'm like really into fitness and stuff, but sometimes it's okay to just take a day off and just relax, it's okay. Life will be just fine.
Yeah. And you can always ask yourself, well, what am I afraid of if I do take that day?
Yeah. It's like, am I really going to lose friends because of it? Probably. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like it's more self-inflicted than anything.
Exactly. And all of this is, that's kind of the point of the work that I do, is so much of this is self-inflicted.
Yeah. But I really appreciate you spending time with me on the podcast, and I really enjoyed our conversation, and thank you. I can't wait to read your chapter when the book comes out.
Yeah, this was really fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.